All right, Clay. So first things first, I'm glad after watching this episode that there is absolutely no sexual tension between the two of us. That would make our jobs very difficult as podcasters. So let's get to talking about One Night in Dick Bay. Sick Bay. focuses on the adventures of Cock Bacula.
What do you have to say? What are you saying? How hard is it to have these conversations, Wes?
Pretty hard. It's somewhere in between impossible and extremely rock hard.
We just lost like 15 viewers.
That lost the YouTube ad. I sacrificed the ad revenue of the couple pennies that we get for that a little bit.
We're gonna need you to verify your age before you watch this video.
I keep calling it, it's not One Night, which sounds more Shakespearean than that. It's actually just a night in Sick Bay. But I think One Night is actually a little bit more poetic and speaks to one night of love, I suppose, that's been gone.
Or like the song, One Night in Bangkok.
That's true. Also sexually appropriate for this.
Yeah, by Murray Head. You ever hear that song? That's actually the guy that sang that song. I don't know if he was... That song was big, at least in the UK, I think. But Murray Head, brother of Anthony Stewart Head, who played Giles on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and also the original Judas and the original concept album version of Jesus Christ Superstar. So it all comes together.
Yeah, there's only a limited number of supremely creative people in this world, and occasionally they work on the same things. We'll take a break. We'll play a clip from the episode, and then we'll come back and we'll break down A Night in Sick Bay.
Have you heard from your friends on the surface?
Not yet.
I guess they haven't finished compiling their list of punishments.
They're not interested in punishing you. They only want an appropriate apology.
I'm sorry.
For what?
Just practicing.
All right, so the episode is called A Night in Sick Bay. It is the fifth episode of the second season. It aired on October 16th, 2002. Written by Rick Berman and Brandon Braga, directed by David Straton in Universe Date. It's unknown, but it's One Night in 2152. In this episode, Archer spends a night in sickbay with Dr. Phlox after Porthos picks up a deadly virus on an alien planet. Calls back the Cretacins, which are from an episode that I can't quite remember, but we've seen them before, and that they are referencing some event that happened in the very past. The other thing, I don't get to do this very often, but I get to sort of pat myself on the back. I've never seen this episode before, as we talked about. I haven't watched much Enterprise past the first season. In Rogue Planet, I made a point that you kind of disagreed with or maybe didn't think was actually there, but I semi-jokingly questioned whether Rogue Planet, which is the night vision hunting episode, whether or not it was a metaphor for Archer being sexually frustrated at that point, where he is imagining a woman in the woods as he's on this planet and he's just kind of looking around for it. I guess it's been brewing in the writing team's head that's actually something that's going on here, where Archer is sexually frustrated. And doesn't Beyond open with commentary similar to this, where Kirk's voiceover at the start of Star Trek Beyond is talking about how they've all been... I don't know if he says they're specifically sexually frustrated, but he mentions dating on the ship, right? And stuff like that. And that like being out in deep space for so long has caused repercussions for it.
I guess. Well, yeah, they show the crew actively dating or engaging with each other.
Yeah, right. I forget the context of it, if they're frustrated.
Yeah, I think it's just a general malaise of being out in space for so long.
And the sort of like 90210 inherent drama that would come from people who would have to be hooking up on this ship or doing something, and just how the 90210 effect is just like how a small group of people will interdate with each other, and there seems to be no larger world that exists outside of them.
Right.
But that's what a night in sick bay is. I'll throw it to you with this thing. This is frequently listed as one of the worst episodes of Star Trek across all the series. I don't know if I agree with that. I find this incredibly awful, but supremely watchable in some way.
Sure. It's
I love the tone of this episode. It's like some weird Midsummer Night's Dream sequence where Phlox is extremely bizarre, and I like bizarre Phlox, and Archer is in this like semi-dream state where he keeps waking up and you're never sure if he's asleep or if this is a dream or if this is all really happening. It's super small. It's this side of the ship you don't see, which is apparently everyone works through the night 24/7 except for Archer, who needs to sleep. Like, Hoshi's on the bridge taking messages. Phlox is in his thing feeding his animals.
Well, we don't see Tucker and Reed through the whole episode, or Mayweather, yep. So they're probably asleep.
Trip, you see, because he talks about the engines need to be fixed.
Oh, that's whatever. Right. That's right, yeah.
So what'd you think about A Night in Sick Bay?
I think I would agree that it is not a good episode, but it is very watchable. It was just all over the place. I actually didn't really like the tone, because I feel like they could have done the same story without Porthos dying being the centerpiece of it, because that really adds a weird...
it's a huge flaw that Porthos is such a like primary vector of this story.
Yeah, for a number of reasons. Foremost being that this episode, like for the first 15 minutes of this episode, all I could think was, I think T'Pol has every right to relieve him of duty because he is no longer fit for duty.
Yeah.
I was watching this with my girlfriend, and every after every scene, she would turn to me and say, he's the worst captain.
Yeah. Which is a flaw that we've been talking about in the first season. This feels like it's highlighting how awful of a captain he is.
I would say the best scene in the episode is probably the treadmill scene.
Yeah. A lot of reasons why that's such a good scene.
Don't even get me started on that. Where they actually literally say or T'Pol literally says kind of snidely the thing about him suffering the consequences of his actions that he hadn't thought through or something like that. So that was nice. But the rest of it, like him getting pissed off that his dog got sick because he brought the dog down to a diplomatic mission on another planet, and the dog got, he's mad because they didn't scan the dog.
With a species that he knows gets upset super easily about everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you've got this like I don't want to call it high drama because I think it's cheap. That they put the dog in mortal danger because that's going to work every time. But you've got that as the centerpiece to this story, which is seems to be like this lighthearted romp about Archer being pent up and stressed out and not being able to sleep through the night.
Yeah.
And I can't, the only reason I can think of that they have Porthos be in this situation is to get Archer to sick bay.
And there's no other reason. Fully functional in sick bay.
Right. There's no other reason for him to stay the night in sick bay.
Right.
Other than the fact that he's worried about Porthos. So right.
If he was ill, he doesn't have free agency as a character. Like if he was like bedridden in sick bay, it's not the same thing as him just kind of visiting and hanging out there.
Yeah. So it's really weird to me to have this like serious emotional downer element at the middle of this clearly like farcical, like you were saying, sort of
whimsical,
exaggerated, whimsical kind of exploration of, you know, a guy getting a shame boner for the woman that he works with.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I don't think Phlox is really getting to the core of Archer's issue here by pointing this out, because I just assume every guy on that ship has a boner for T'Pol.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and probably some of the women.
Well,
it's...
Go ahead.
No, that's about it. Like, it's like, yeah, sure. Of course he's got the hots for T'Pol. I'm sure if you had that conversation with Trip, he'd say the same thing.
What I like about this story.
Maybe not line, Reed. Although her head, like, if she put some gel in her hair, her head would be very pineapple-y. Yep. So that's it's possible.
so spiky. What I like about the, I think this episode is bad, and I think maybe my final rating will have to like I'll have to stick to the criteria that I always set out about how I grade these things, and I probably will end up giving this a harsher grade than I think the episode deserves, just because of the way that where its flaws come from. I think I have to stick to the consistency of how I grade these episodes, even if I like this one a little bit more than I grade it. The problem with this one is that, as you're saying, I think it's all over the place. It's not really sure what the main issue is. And so because of that, it has this very whimsical attitude over something that's semi-serious in some ways. Like it's not the goofy, lighthearted adventure, because I would say that the one thing that's interesting about it is that Archer Archer is not in love with T'Pol, which is the way that you would expect this. Like he kind of just needs to get his rocks off. He's like, mm-hmm. he's sexually frustrated, and this Vulcan with enormous breasts is constantly in his face talking to him about stuff, and he can't think about anything else. And I like they don't really have the balls as a show to come out and say that that's what this is about. They kind of tiptoe around that a little bit. And
I couldn't believe they resorted to the, I'll do my breast.
Do my best.
You know, like, come on. It wasn't even like warranted. It's not like she was wearing anything skimpier. It was just like, we didn't do that gag yet. Let's throw that in there.
Give me your lips. Lisp. List.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of appreciate the honesty of like people like, well, they're out in space. They don't have a holodeck at this point, so they can't go masturbate in their holodeck, which we know is what everyone else is doing when this technology emerges. So what are they doing in this case? And I like that they don't explicitly make this about Archer has secretly been pining for T'Pol, really. I don't get that read anyway. That doesn't seem to be what's happening. And because of that, they try to disguise the sexuality of it, like the raw sexuality, with this sort of whimsical, goofy plot on top of it. Mm. And I just don't know if that pairing really works. And, you know, the other downside of this is that T'Pol is just some paper, like cutout, like a magazine cutout that the guys all just kind of pin up and look at her like that. And that's the other issue with it, I suppose. But I don't know if this is an episode that demands T'Pol have agency, because it's not a relationship, really. It's just about his frustration. So I'm fine with her not being that, but she's never really excelled beyond that in any other episodes that they focused on.
You know what's kind of ironic to me about this episode is they go out of their way to objectify her more in a single episode than they have up to this point. But I didn't find what they were doing like sexy. You know, like in the other ones, they've got the thing where, you know, she falls boobs first into Archer's face and they're like, oh, and they've got these other moments where they like point it out and where they like really are bringing attention to certain aspects of her character, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Her defining characteristics, yeah.
Yeah, and in this one, it was like they were doing that, but they were also restraining themselves from actually drawing attention to it. Because like you've got this opening scene on the sexy shower rub down room. Yeah,
two girls, one cup of sunscreen. That's exactly what I'm on. And, but they I think what you're going to say, they play it off by Archer's more interested in his dog than the two women. Yeah.
Yeah, he's more interested in the dog. And then even the other scene, I couldn't believe that they did half naked T'Pol and T'Pol running on a treadmill in the same episode. But even there, they don't even like focus on that.
Yeah.
You know, if they were really trying to play up this idea that Archer had the hots for T'Pol, you would think that they would be, the camera would be objectifying her more as she's, you know, running. But they didn't really do that. And I'm glad that they didn't, but it's also really ironic to me because the one episode where this is the point of the story they're telling, they don't really do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, it's not a lot of, there's no scenes of Archer just trying to, you know, fill out some paperwork or something, and he keeps like, his head keeps flashing to like a camera panning up her body or something, and he's just like, he can't focus on anything. And I think that's the problem, is that as a Star Trek show, they're scared to do that. Like they, I don't know if it would have worked, because we've always said that Star Trek is unsexy, but I feel like this is the kind of, I think this episode kind of needs to be unsexy, and I think that they accomplished that in some ways. At the same time, it does need to objectify T'Pol that way. So I'm not sure. But
I think it's weird because you run the risk of it turning into like Porky's in space, you know?
Yes.
And that probably wouldn't come off very well. And like if they did go out of their way to like objectify her as much as they kind of are implying they want to, I think it would come off way, way, way worse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's great regardless, but it's a weird choice where it's like, yeah, they're trying to do this sort of like kind of edgy, sexy thing, but they're also really completely balking at it. So
I think it becomes no longer objectification if they treat it the same, but they're more honest with Archer's motivations about things. Mm-hmm. I think that becomes less. There's almost like an if they're honest about it, if it's not just the kind of like the decontamination scene from the Broken Bow pilot, which is just like, why is this so sexy? There's no reason for this right. to be sexy. But right. if they're more honest about this is why we're playing it as sexy, or hopefully trying to attempt to play it as sexy, at least if you're honest about Archer's motivations, it feels, you could say it's immoral or something, but I don't think he's not being sleazy about it. You know, more of a, if he is awakened to the fact that he has these sexual feelings towards her, it makes sense that he looks at her like that. And you don't think that it's nearly as objectionable as they have done in the past with T'Pol, where it's unnecessary.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean, where it's like, this is the point of the story they're telling, but they're not going out of their way to show it.
Right.
Because I think you could argue that if you were going to show it, that now would be the time to do it.
Yeah,
but but they don't, and it's just tonally, I find it really inconsistent and all over the place. And ultimately, I mean, I think this is a great Phlox episode. I thought he was fantastic.
He's very good. I like Weird Phlox. I think that he's excellent. One bit of trivia I was reading: they have a line here about how he's trained in like 6 vertebrate degrees or veterinarian degrees. I guess there was writer room discussion about they wanted to have some kind of reveal, if not in this episode, that Phlox was on Denobula, or whatever his planet is called, is just a veterinarian. And he sort of tricked them into thinking that he's a doctor, but he's just like an animal specialist, which makes sense with all the animals that he has in his in his sick bay. And at a certain point, you wonder, well, isn't a human an animal to him, really?
Exactly,
like, what's the difference? I like Phlox. I like Weird Phlox. I like Phlox existing in a kind of surreal space that he doesn't really feel when he's chasing the bat with the net. I think Billingsley does really good physical comedy when he's trying to catch the thing with the net. And I like all that stuff. And I think Phlox is interesting. They pair it with his toenail clipping scenes and his tongue scratching, which I didn't really understand, but I like Phlox outside of that. And this is a good Phlox episode.
Yeah. Yeah. On the other side though, I think this episode is Exhibit A in Scott Bakula being grossly miscast in the show.
Yep.
I don't think he's good in this.
It's a miscast, or Archer's poorly written.
I think he's miscast. I don't find anything he's doing in this episode believable.
Mm.
He seems like, I don't know. Maybe it's just I don't like his delivery or something. But it's I didn't find any of the emotional feelings he was going through particularly believable. It all just came off as like Archer angry, which is just sort of like the regular Archer, a little bit louder and like his brows a little furrowed.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really get the sense that he was going through this stressful
grief.
Trying night.
Yep.
He just, I don't know, on top of that, he's got the hots for his subordinate or whatever.
Yep.
I don't know. I just didn't think he was really pulling it off.
Is the episode saying that he's so focused on, I this is one of those episodes I'm not sure if I'm missing something or if it's just not making the dots connected in a way that you need to draw. Is his feelings toward Porthos a repression of his T'Pol feelings, or are they two different things? Is he trying to distract himself with Porthos, and that's why he's so about it? Or is it just that he really likes Porthos, and as a result of the situation with the dog, he's yelling at T'Pol, which is causing Phlox to diagnose that as sexual frustration?
Yeah, I don't think that the Porthos thing is like a stand-in for his feelings. I think it's just like it's just like 4 different kinds of stress, kind of all hitting at the same time, where he's stressed about the relationship with the Cretaceans. What are they called?
Cretaceans.
He's stressed about that, and then his dog gets sick, which then makes him more mad at them. And that's the dog is like his oldest friend or whatever.
We sent them the DNA sequence. Why didn't they look at it?
Yeah, he does more for Porthos in this one episode than he's ever done for Trip in any other episode.
So
that's obviously really stressful, and I think it's just like it's a snowball of stress all kind of coming to a head. And which is why I find it so tonally weird, because it just seems so farcical.
Yes.
That I don't believe, I don't really believe the stress aspect of it to the degree that it feels like they want you to. But obviously it's meant to be a silly episode.
Yeah. I don't believe it's fascinating, because for me, and I was wondering if this was just a personal thing, my view of pets and dogs seems to be becoming kind of a minority view towards them, which is that I feel it's generally becoming acceptable in the culture to think of pets and dogs as humans that are just differently shaped. Like, you're supposed mm-hmm. to treat them like they're a human. And I think there's like a sizable portion of the population that if you came across a dog and a random person, or your dog and a random person hanging off the cliff, a sizable majority would grab their dog as opposed to rescuing the person, you know, in that situation. Sure. And I get kind of annoyed at this
person.
What's that?
Who's the person? Is it like
just a random person? You have no information
or something.
They could be a skinhead. You don't know anything about them, but that's the risk of trying to rescue them.
Well, I mean, I know my dog.
Exactly. He's a Nazi. So it's no. The thing that I have trouble with is that Archer's response to his dog kind of annoys me in this. And I don't think you're supposed to feel that way. I think you're supposed to feel that what Porthos is going through is like extremely traumatic for Archer.
You're such a monster.
But even at least the episode, I think, agrees, because Phlox has a line where he goes like, yeah, I'll take care of your subservient quadruped or something. And it's like, okay, at least Phlox recognizes that Archer is overreacting to his dog getting sick. And that's what makes me think that.
Well, but he's doing that from a culture that doesn't understand the concept of having a pet.
Right, which I find analogous to myself in some, or like treating the pet that way. I can understand. Sure. Like, you know, like I just remember growing up when dogs got hit by a car, it's like, all right, we got another dog. And now it feels like people have funerals and they invite you to the dog's funeral and stuff. And I feel like Phlox represents that older view of pets, because he keeps animals. He knows what it's like to have a pet, but he doesn't mm-hmm. consider these things pets. He considers them animals that he looks after or something. There's a difference there. I just think that if Archer's not using Porthos as a repression device for T'Pol, I find that I would find him using Porthos as a stand-in for his sexual frustration more understandable than that if he just is like, my poor dog that I have caused all this misery to happen to because I took him on this away mission for no good reason in the first place, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think that's there. I don't think he's using Porthos as a stand-in for anything, unfortunately.
No, I think it's just it's a long-standing companionship role
yep.
that is now in danger of dying for stupid reasons.
Right.
That he is. And also, it's not like you can just get another dog when you're in space. So
yeah. Just replicate that son of a bitch. No, I know. Yeah. He's gonna have trouble picking up another dog, and he seems to be a beagle guy, but
I am legit disappointed that he doesn't actually have chameleon powers, though. When Phlox made that joke, I was really hoping they were going to circle back to that and have it be that he actually does have disappearing chameleon powers.
It's how we need to cut the budget, gentlemen. How are we going to do that? Make the dog invisible. We'll lose the mm-hmm. dog. The dog money mm-hmm. is killing us. And besides that, the Porthos in the thing of water is disturbing. Is really weird.
Yeah.
And strange as they're like drilling into his head.
That whole scene, I was like, maybe don't get into like a psychology discussion about your own sexual repression while Phlox is doing experimental brain surgery on your best friend. Like,
yeah.
Wait and let him do his focus and do his thing, and then you can talk about whether or not you want to kiss T'Pol later, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Choose a lane.
Do you find any problem with the Archer Porthos thing outside of it just being kind of odd, or do you like? I find it distracting. I guess you don't find it as distracting, or
I don't find his reaction distracting to it.
Okay.
Distracting. I think it's just.
Do you think it makes Archer look like a moron? I guess is my. I think it makes Archer look like an idiot because
I don't think his reaction to his dog possibly dying makes him look like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
I think his reaction to who to blame for it makes him look like an idiot.
I think it's interfering with his ability to do his job, which I think makes him look idiotic. Like he doesn't have the mental fortitude to put his dog thing to the side and be like, how do I fix mm-hmm. this thing with the Curtassins, which is the primary point that he's out there for. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think his treatment, like, let's say it wasn't a dog. Let's say it was his kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought his kid down against better judgment yep. to this planet that they didn't know whether or not he could possibly, you know, he could catch something. And then the kid catches something. And then he's pissed off about the kid catching something because they didn't accurately scan the kid. And it's like, well, you're a fucking starship captain.
Right.
Don't bring your kid down to this planet that you're trying to, you know, mend relationships with. You know, it's not their fault. Even
no.
if it is their fault, it's not their fault. It's your fault.
I would agree. And I would say that I think that's
actually... You could still be pissed that your kid's dying.
Right.
But, and I think you can... I think what's missing in this situation is he's pissed about Porthos dying, and he is pissed at the Cretaceans for not doing the scan correctly or whatever.
Yeah.
But nobody really takes him aside. Maybe T'Pol does in the running scene. I don't know. But nobody really takes him aside and is like... You shouldn't have brought the dog.
Yeah,
I think why this happened.
They hint at it. They hinted like, yeah. why did you do this in the first place? Which is a good question. But if this was Archer's kid, right? I think that is somewhat interesting to me. Where it's like, if Archer's kid is dying and he also has to try to focus on this mission, I understand conflict there. Like at that point, it's Archer's like, who cares about the Cretaceans? Like I know this is our mission to be out here, but like fuck these people, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They would really shoot themselves in the foot if they kept everything else the same, because if Archer's looking over his dying kid in a hospital bed and he's like, man, I need to fuck something. Like right. at that point, it becomes extremely weird. They can do the fuck something storyline because Porthos is just a dog, you know? They can have Archer be distracted by something else because it is not a human who's ill at this point.
It's still just a strange choice. To having that clearly life and death stressful situation at the core of this
yes.
romp about being alone in space too long. Yeah, it's
yes.
it's just a weird choice.
I'd agree, that which is it's such a strange tonal thing that it makes me think that they're trying to link them somehow to each other, but I don't really it's either not effectively done or it's not the point at all. It's two very strange plots to stick together.
I think that's the biggest problem, is that I don't know what the point of this episode is. I don't know like what they're trying to say aside from, oh, he's horny for T'Pol.
Yeah.
And that he, you know, clearly they're trying to address his abject or complete negativity towards the Cretaceans and his reluctance to follow their customs or whatever.
Their customs are very silly. Cutting the
They are. that sequence felt like something out of Lower Decks.
It felt like something
they would do in Lower Decks.
He's sweating like a fucking pig as he's chainsawing a tree down.
Yeah. But like if that's the point of the episode, it's like you have to be able to learn when to say I'm sorry and admit that you are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sure, but that's not what the thrust of the story is. Thrust of the story.
Nice.
That's not what the thrust of the story is.
Go deeper, Clay. Go deeper with
yeah.
this.
Yeah. Oh, I'll hollow it out, baby.
No, I
know what I mean, though? It's like that's not the point of the story.
Yeah.
The point of the story is not Archer needs to learn how to say he was wrong. The point seems to be some combination of Archer needs to learn how to say he was wrong and apologize, but he also needs to let off some steam. And it's just like, it's a really weird mishmash of like tonal and thematic ideas that doesn't gel into something where you can kind of go, oh, okay,
mm-hmm.
that's what it's about. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know. It's just all over the place.
Right. Like, yeah, there's a non-Star Trek-y version where once he's relieved, in some sense, his negotiations with the Cretaceans goes much more smoothly. You know, like there's some strange connection there where, because you could imply that the sexual frustration is clouding his judgment, which is that he's like, he can't focus because he's distracted. Whether or not you make it sex or it's just like kind of a commentary on a captain not having his full like mind set to something that mm-hmm. he's got in front of him because he's got something else going on. And at that point, I think the dying kid works better than the dog, but I don't know. Like, they can never, they're kind of stuck.
So just so everybody's clear, Wes cannot empathize with love of pets or adult male friendships.
That's right. Everyone needs to grow the fuck up. I would like to hear what other people think about that. Just I feel like I am in a minority about I know some people who expect me to say hello to their pets. And I'm like, I'm not fucking talking to this. Like, you know, like when they come in, they're like, do you want to say hi to the dog? And it's like, is the dog going to say hi to me? Like, what the dog could say something first. I feel like we're sliding into this strange world that Archer represents there. And if he's not hiding something about it and overemphasizing the dog, that makes me think that Archer is not fit for this job, really. And this is the most egregious example of not being fit for his job.
I think this story, I mean, it wouldn't be like the farcical, excuse me, it wouldn't be the farcical romp that it is without the sexual tension element. But I think it works arguably better if you remove that and just have it be about the stress. The Porthos thing then becomes a placeholder for all of this other stuff he's dealing with. And then it becomes about him realizing things that he's done wrong and the need to apologize and the need to have a little bit more, what's the word? Not compassion.
Restraint or something.
Restraint, and just be open. Give these new cultures a little bit more rope, because you've got plenty of stuff baked in to Porthos about it being, you know, it's his pet. Mm. It's the only family he's got left, I think, at this point, because everybody else is in his family's dead or whatever.
Yeah, he thinks about his ex-girlfriend, whose mother he still talks to.
Yeah, still hangs out with his ex's mom, which I'm sure she finds. She's coming over with her new husband and kids, and Archer's there just having tea with her mom and asking her about when the puppies are coming.
The Four Musketeers. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, that's what he would call him, his ex's wife and her dad and her brother. When the four of them would go out and hang out, they were the Four Musketeers.
He said a puppy.
You know, like that, I think if you put more emphasis on the fact that he is grossly overreacting about what's happening here, and that being just like the straw that broke the camel's back on his general tension,
yes,
and not undercutting it with this weird sexual tension thing, then I think your story about him learning to apologize and recognize when he's wrong and do all this other kind of other stuff, which is something that they've been kind of building toward either intentionally or otherwise up to this point, then I think that story is a lot stronger. I don't know if you can get a whole hour out of that without it being a fucking downer the whole time.
Yeah.
Unless you can keep it kind of light, but the things that he's doing are like the light element, where it's like clearly he's stressed and clearly he's off his rocker, and so he's doing strange things and without, you know, drooling over to Paul. But even, I don't know. But I think that story is stronger, but it's not as fun to watch.
Yes.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they get 40 minutes out of it.
Yeah. I feel that way about the other sex storyline too. I feel there is a way to do the sex storyline.
Also, like he threatens to blow them up.
The Cretaceans?
Like after, I mean, not directly, but he says something to the effect of, when Hoshi's telling him that Porthos peed on their ancient tree, he's like, "Well, Porthos better come through, or I'm gonna be the one pissing on their tree with lasers and shit." You know, it's very strange.
yeah. It's just a strange combination of things there too. Like, additionally, it just points out how bad Archer is at his job, where the pissing on the sacred tree thing is To a Star Trek character, it almost feels like that should be the explanation that causes him to realize what he had done wrong, instead of like, you know, instead of just like someone going into like a their friend's church and just like urinating all over the organ, like the church organ or something.
People, well, remember that's like a big plot point in Midsommar, is that dude goes up for any piece on the where they keep the throw the ashes of all their ancestors.
Yeah, so his reaction there, it's like the final straw there, where you're like, what is Archer even talking about at this point? Like he let his dog down, unleashed apparently. Like just let the dog wander around, one of those people.
I mean, that just, I would be pissed if he did that at my house, regardless of how old my tree was.
These trees are not sacred, but they're still mine. Yeah, it's too bad. I was thinking, because I also think that Bakula is not really built for this role. What role would you give Scott Bakula if you had to reshuffle it? I was thinking he could probably do the Trip role fairly well. I think that he could be Tucker in that situation. I think that he has kind of that laid back charm that Connor Trinneer brings to Trip, and Trip can kind of work with. He's not built for captain just because he's, I don't think he has the gravitas that a lot of the Star Trek captains need to pull off storylines like this. He comes across as immature in some ways.
You know, recasting him on the ship, I think would be difficult, but I think he would actually make a great admiral.
Yeah.
Because those guys kind of come in, they do their one scene that is fairly straightforward, and they bring some element to what they're saying, but it doesn't require generally like a huge range of acting.
Yeah.
And I think he would be great as like a recurring admiral character who is, you know, every now and then gets a scene where he does, you know, cause he's good when he's doing his more like straightforward captain stuff, but once he has to really kind of go off, you know, off the deep end a little bit emotionally, I think he's not quite as strong as some of the other characters were.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about Ray Romano? I don't think would be a good cast. I'm just going off other cast members from Men of a Certain Age. Andre Bauer. He'd be a great Star Trek captain. That guy.
He would work too. Be great. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know who you'd replace him with here. I mean, I think we've talked about how Archer should be. Archer can, I said immature a second ago. Archer can be immature, and I think that that's appropriate, but what this episode does is it highlights this flaw he has where he makes mistakes and doesn't tend to really learn from them. And this one you would say he learns from it, but I think that it's offset by his mistake is so naive that he makes that it's like, how the hell did he make that mistake? And like, you know, standing on the transporter or the shuttle pad, is no one going to, Trip's not going to be like, why are you bringing the dog? Why doesn't the dog stay here, John? Yeah. Like, this is unnecessary. Yeah.
Yeah. I watching this episode, especially, I was thinking, I kind of wish that they had cast someone younger as the captain.
Yeah.
Who, not that Bakula is like old, but it's, I almost feel like it would be the stuff that he does and does wrong feels almost like it should be the mistakes of a young man who's been given too much responsibility.
Outside this mission, it's about learning, about growing up. Like, it's about learning how to do the mission, but it's also about what it means to become a person.
Like imagine if the setup for this show was Jonathan Archer, son of Mr. Archer,
I guess. Dr. Archer, he's a Dr. scientist. Archer.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. He went to 4 years of space school. I can't, or 8 years of space school. I can't discount that.
My mother works for doctors, and they gave Alistair a present for his birthday a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And they signed it like, happy birthday, Alistair. Doctor's name, MD. He signed MD at the end of his card.
It wasn't just like Chris.
he did his full thing and put MD. And there are some doctors who just do, like, they're going to let you know that they're a doctor, you know?
Well, it's like Bill and Ted, where he always refers to himself as Bill S. Preston Esquire.
Right.
Although I don't know if he ever passed the bar and earned that Esquire, but
just keep trying until you do it.
You know, don't even know what Esquire means. I assumed it's a law thing.
Yeah, I just think of royalty. I think of the squires who put the armor on the horses. That's what you are.
But like, imagine if the setup for Enterprise was the son of Dr. Archer, architect of whatever this mission is, the warp drive or whatever, is going to be the one leading this mission, but this guy's like 25, mm-hmm. or you know, maybe 30.
Yeah.
And so it's putting him as the captain is like almost more of a publicity move than it is picking the right person for the job.
Yep.
So you've got a young, inexperienced captain with a crew of equally inexperienced people, but also people who are older than him. So this is where my version of Reed comes in, where Reed is a much older Starfleet person who's more used to the war aspect.
Yeah. Conservative as opposed to this kind of
yeah. So now, and then you've got T'Pol, who is much smarter, for lack of, you know, for sake of argument. And you've got that tension going on. So you're watching, I'm kind of describing what the Kelvin movies ultimately are, although they kind of don't really acknowledge the fact that Kirk is like 29 in those movies. But you know what I mean? Where it's like, so then these mistakes that he's making feel more like a younger person learning what it means to be a captain,
yep.
instead of
symbolically representing the Federation as it gauges.
Instead of 40-something-year-old Scott Bakula losing his shit trying to catch a bat because his dog's dying and he wants to have sex with his friend,
yeah,
you know, yeah. And he can't bring himself to say sorry because he let his dog trample the flower garden of these highly offendable people.
Yeah. Tyson, I think it makes the younger version of this story, younger version of the captain, the sex aspect also seems stranger. Where here it's kind of funny because it's Archer who's older and you'd presume experienced in some way, but also dealing with T'Pol, who in the Risa episode acknowledges that the humans need to have sex to calm down. So she, like, T'Pol's the character that you could have this frank conversation with and she would not be upset by it. But Archer, like, they don't even take the drama of Archer feeling weird talking about this with T'Pol. And that is kind of a weird contrast of T'Pol is the one person that you could talk to. She's the person you can talk to and not worry about offending, you know, because she will just treat it as a conversation.
That's the thing that's so weird about that final scene is because when they do have that conversation in Archer's quarters. Room,
yeah.
He's very, very like stoic about it. Where he's like, I don't even remember what he says, but he's very stoic about it. And then they cut to T'Pol, and she's like, "Well, I guess it's good that we can't do anything about this, isn't it, Captain?" And he's like, "Yep. By the way,
make sure that door is locked.
Would you be interested in a promotion to co-captain? So we are no longer I'm no longer your superior."
Yeah, I know. On the way out, please make sure.
Like,
it's so
weird because I never get I have not gotten the impression once in this show that T'Pol is like interested in him.
Yeah,
they just end up like boobs to face for jokey reasons, and it's usually Archer who's like.
I'd say both ways. I don't get the sense that I don't get any sense that Archer's interested in T'Pol outside of comic situations where he rubs his face in her. Breasts, you know, and that's not saying that he's interested. It's just kind of like, oh, she's got big hooters. Let's rub John's face on them. And that's what also makes this seem a little bit weird. Although
if they think they've been planting the seeds that T'Pol and Archer are like into each other, they did a terrible job.
Right. Yeah. But I think with what they're saying is that it's not about a relationship. So I can get behind this episode of never having brought it up as long as they stick to this idea that he is just pent up and she's the nearest potential outlet for him or whatever. He's obviously not into Asian chicks because he doesn't split his time between Hoshi and
T'Pol. I was going to say the one thing we know is that Hoshi is DTF. So,
and she's obviously trying to impress him. She's been working 48 hours straight, sending messages, coming into the sick bay at 2 o'clock in the morning, cares about his dog.
Right.
You know, it's all there.
Well, that's one of those things too, where it's like, so everybody has been on this ship for an equal amount of time. Are we to assume that everybody is at a level of pent-up sexual frustration that Archer is?
Except for T'Pol. Yeah, I would assume
except
so.
Except for T'Pol?
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't that actually be a more interesting episode if you were going through the point of view of T'Pol?
Right.
Interacting with a ship full of sexually oppressed people. Like, and the stuff that, since you're going through her point of view, you can heighten the ridiculousness of what they're doing, like the normal day-to-day things they're doing, because what she's seeing is the external presentation of this stress where, you know, Hoshi and Trip are working in the Jeffries tube like for 5 hours and they're all sweaty and stuff. And they're like, and they, you know, it's, I think that's,
it's a POV that would be of a her in the dining hall. And she's just looking around and every male crew member is just looking at the camera as she like pans around and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, you're looking around and like, everyone's like shooting her looks and you're doing that thing where clearly their eyes go down.
Yeah.
You know, and flick back up. It's like, it's, I think that would be a much more interesting way to handle this than just the wacky things that happen when you are in space alone and with just your dog.
That's why Porthos didn't die.
I did like the dream, though. I thought the dream was funny.
The funeral sequence?
Yeah. I thought that was funny.
All right, I guess we're done with A Night in Sickbay. Let's take a break. We'll play a clip from the episode. We'll come back. We'll read some patron thoughts and give our final thoughts about A Night in Sickbay.
Since I've been getting so much practice giving apologies, I thought I might give you one.
That's not necessary.
Yeah, it is. I've been under a lot of stress lately. Haven't gotten much sleep. My dog...
There's no need to apologize.
Whatever friction there's been between us, I'd like to try to minimize it.
Friction is to be expected whenever people work in close quarters for extended periods of time.
I guess that's always been true, especially when the people are of the opposite sex.
Then it's good that you're my superior officer, that we're not in a position to allow ourselves to become attracted to one another, hypothetically. If we were, the friction that you speak of could be much more problematic.
Thank you very much for listening, guys. If you enjoyed the content today, you can go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. Sorry, I just got like a pounding in my temple there for some reason. It like felt like my head was about to explode. It's all this sexual tension.
Yeah, when was the last time you were intimate with a woman or a dog?
I'm married. What's the joke? I'm married, so it's 8 years or whatever it is at this point. Hey-o, that's some good comedy.
You've been married for 8 years?
We got married in 13, so 7 years.
Oh, wow.
7 years. I think we got married in 13.
So 7 years, you're just starting to get bored, right?
That's right. Exactly. I hate those.
Let's do
jokes.
Some wife jokes for a while. the height of well thought out comedy, wife marriage frustration.
That's
jokes.
Right. That's right.
Don't you hate it when you're trying to watch the game?
They're like golf jokes. Yeah. And then that you're like, it's just a joke you say, even if you don't believe it, you could be like happily married, but you still have to make the jokes.
Right.
That was it doing. Patreon.com/thepenskyfile. If you want to support my wife and me, you can go there and you can a couple dollars a month. You get extra stuff. You get extra podcasts. You get extra videos. You get commentary tracks. You get polls to vote on what we cover. We are talking about Liquid Sky this month for the sci-fi movie, which is a movie I'd never heard of, but it's about UFOs and heroin and sex. So it's basically a sequel to this episode.
Sweet.
I guess that's it. What did we talk about last month? Moon we talked about. So you can check out all that stuff on patreon.com/thepenskyfile. And as always,
how come Gertie never asks Sam if he's the last time he was made out with a woman?
I know. He
I
should.
I guess because he knows that she's a clone and he's only like 5 minutes
come
old.
Come on, Gertie. Let's give a special thank you to our Captain Tier supporters as well. Special thank you goes to Christian Pouch, Stark Latif, Chris Tinsley, Mike Burnett, Sean, Cardinal Doomsday, Joint Mango, Matthew Cutler, Ben Douglas, Neil Brennan, Kyle Barrett, Samuel Custer, Nick Sergey, Bradley Killens, Matthew Ross, Rune Vendler, Nathan Elliott, Eric Johnson, Andrew Cholla, Grim Santo, Poindexter G, Dwayne Hackett, Jordan Cooper, Derek Zajac, Russell Elledge, Kevin Reyes, Vault 13 Hero, Stephen Minton, Darth Musk, HH28, Matt Currier 6, Jacob 123, Mike Harris, Jakey's Gamer, Patrick Seba, Captain Brazen, Kevin Lowry, Eric Santuan, Corey Martin, William Scheisler, and Timothy Cooley. Thank you very much for supporting the show and taking care of my dog while he's been sick. And I think we're going to pay
like, imagine if I You know, we've known each other for a long time. If I showed up to your house with my dog and just let him off leash and let him roam around your house, yeah. you wouldn't be cool with that. And we're not even like of a different species that have never met each other and right. are highly you know, volatile as far as their social mores go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like what the fuck was he thinking?
I know it's the kind of thing that feels like it deserves a scene at the start or something. Like the cold open. What's the cold open here? They rub each other down. That comes in late.
The cold open is sexy shower scene.
I feel the cold open in this one had to be the lead in to the mission, and then immediately after the credits, it cuts to post what went wrong. Like you never see anything on the planet, but you get a sense of like just some sort of rationale where I can at least get somewhat behind Archer's sensibility here. You know, mm-hmm. like. Just so it doesn't, I don't even know if he could come up with a good excuse, but it'll at least make me think that he's not thinking or he is thinking about what's going on.
Yeah. I do think if you took the dog element out of this or the dog dying element out of this, I think this could be a Lower Decks episode.
Mm.
And it might be better served
yeah.
as one.
Repackage it. Repap. Pap smear. All right. Let's go with, what are we looking at? Patron comments on A Night in Sick Bay. Is this the first one? Yes, it is. Thomas Darnell says, first off, what is an autoimmune system? If there ever was an episode that captured perfectly, our captain was a symbolic choice based on nepotism and legacy and not at all an ability or temperament, it's this mess. Some of these writers definitely had a barely competent boss along the way, and I sympathize. And now we know why Picard's fish never got to go on away missions. In an episode that really went for sexy T'Pol, it was kind of funny to see Phlox take her up to... Take her up. You seem tense. When's the last time you got laid? Response to his tantrums. But making me think about Ryza again seals a one rating from me. Let me get rid of this paper. Matt Ross says, One Night in Sick Bay can make a grown man crazy between the toenail clipping and the tongue scraping. Serious evidence why not to take your subservient quadruped on a deep space mission. Archer's arrogance is not really diminished, yet T'Pol's I can't keep up with you is best transformed to pardon my French, Archer, but you are an asshole. It is nice to know that the Enterprise has a chainsaw. Totally skippable.
Yeah, that was weird.
The chainsaw?
Yeah, I guess why not, but...
I felt embarrassed for Scott Bakula, the actor, in that sequence. Like it's like
I got to give him credit. He was going for it. Like he was all in yeah. on that chainsawing, weird dancing around sequence.
Yeah, the oral history about him. Everyone loves him. They say he's a really great guy and a total pro. Just like that's all anyone ever says about him. So he's like he always showed up. He knew the lines. He just got the day's work done, and he was like a really nice guy about everything.
Not surprising.
Point XG says, since the many faults of this much maligned episode have no doubt been covered by other patrons, I will try to list positives. The dream sequence with Minister Phlox presiding over the funeral amongst the graves of the other fallen good boys starts off wonderfully absurd. I really like Phlox talking about his extended family and what they all mean to him. To Paul's comment, I can't keep up with you, is perfectly written Vulcan passive aggressiveness. Okay, that's all. The episode really is terrible. Yeah, I am... Phlox's story is strange to me. It feels like it deserves a better episode, that sequence where he talks about his wife and husbands and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Not going to say it's unrelated, but I just feel like that belongs in a better Phlox episode or something. I don't know. It made me like Phlox. It's a good sequence for him.
No, he definitely comes out the best of this. I think it's definitely a good episode for him.
A latte librarian says, A Night in Sick Bay, I'd like to issue a formal protest against this weird Archer and T'Pol romance. Who do I write a letter to? As a dog lover, I like seeing Porthos on screen, but this episode was so boring I had to stop it and come back later. The most interesting part was learning more about Phlox's medical ethics in regard to killing the chameleon to save Porthos. 2 ritual chainsaws out of 5. It's true. There's a hierarchy in his mind because he's a veterinarian. Kyle Barrett says, 42 minutes of Archer being an absolute tosspot, letting his pride get the better of him to such a hyperbolic degree that he feels like a satire of his regular character. The only way he could be more insufferable is if he started whining on a podcast about not getting enough information on company policy and regulation details in the film Moon. Turning Porthos into Damien Hirst exhibit is probably...
Shots fired.
...is probably what Archer deserves after cruelly keeping a dog locked up in a tiny starship and feeding the poor thing nothing but cheese. The romance is terrible. I wish Phlox had just wanked Archer off to get rid of his sexual frustration rather than have that awful dream sequence. Even some fun Phlox moments can't save this failed comedy from being the first 1 out of 5 of the show.
You know, that's another thing. I think part of what I don't think Bakula gets across is I feel like Bakula should be acknowledging how ridiculous this all is, like with his facial features in some way. But since he's like locked into that, like, you know, Will Ferrell doing George Bush peak eyebrow facial expression, he doesn't ever get like wild eyed or anything, or like, I can't believe what the hell is going on. I'm just trying to sleep. And, you know, it's he doesn't quite get out of it the manicness, I think, that is necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always surprised by episodes like this, not just this Enterprise episode, but I feel that this one didn't really build. It kind of didn't, how whimsical and surreal everything feels. But there's a certain mindset you get into when your sleep is interrupted constantly. Like, people who have newborns know it, or if you're just like, if something weird happens during the middle of the night and you're just up every hour for some reason, there's a kind of like furious insanity that gives you, where you just become like enraged, and you're like, and he handles this just like it's a mild inconvenience, really. And I don't know if it's supposed to be the weirdness is him kind of like reacting to not getting enough sleep, but it is just one night. I would have played that up a little bit more. Like, the lack of sleep is affecting him more deeply than it does here. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They keep doing that time stamp thing.
Right.
And it ultimately never really feels like it amounts to anything.
Yeah. And every time he wakes up, he's like, how long was I asleep? And Phlox says 40 minutes. And he's like, okay, so it's 11:30 at night or whatever.
Yeah.
Yarpy says, A Night in Sick Bay. The title is exactly what I need after watching this episode. Benjamin Espinosa says, A Night in Sick Bay. Watch one grown man act more immature than my 13-year-old. Witness grotesque toenail clippings and gaze in wonder at not one but two gratuitous decon scenes. This is as bad as I remember, but it's also kind of entertaining in a weird way. It has some funny setups, like Porthos urinating on the sacred tree. The wood scene at the end reminded me of the Lower Decks episode Temporal Edict. 2 Porthos puppets out of 5.
I also think that this does, again, bring to the forefront the ridiculousness of the decontamination thing and how it is clearly just set up to be like a titillating thing.
Yeah.
But since it's a network television show, they can't really go there with it, because if the point is that you're supposed to like rub this contamination gel on your body and stuff, but everybody in there's wearing clothes still.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's not like, it doesn't look like they've gotten all of the parts.
They get
each
other's backs 110%. The backs are taken care of, but there must be a lot of sequences of like Phlox going like, there's a huge infection around your dick. Like, this is just this, you've got a mildew forest going on down there and stuff like that.
Yeah. But it's like, clearly it's supposed to be a full body decontamination thing, but they're all wearing like tasteful cover-ups where it's like, come on, if
modest lingerie is the best way to describe it.
This would realistically be like the shower sequence in Starship Troopers, where everybody's just like, everything's open and they're just taking showers and stuff, and nobody cares.
No, that makes more sense. And I mean, on a technical aspect, it feels like the kind of thing it would be like airport security. You'd go in and hold your arms up, and a spray device would just like spray you 100, you know, a full circle, 360.
You mean you wouldn't have to like warm up the
warm your hands
decontamination
up.
Stuff in your hands before you just very sensually rub it in to your coworker's back?
And my wife gets angry at me. Even, you know, we've been married for 47 years at this point, and I really can't be bothered to do a good job lotioning someone with sunscreen. She gets pissed all the time because it's so tedious. Like, I hate it. I can't imagine doing this after every away mission.
Well, I mean, she's probably used to people doing it correctly, because this is how they scrub in at the hospital she works at, right? you know, you just get in there and they
this'll get rid of all that COVID. Let's see. I guess we're... sorry. There's one more. A Night in Sick Bay. Is there one more? Yes, last one. Neil Brennan says, why are T'Pol's Vulcan undies so much skimpier than the human ones? Because it's not logical to have extra material on your underwear, I would have to assume. I feel bad for Jolene Blaylock at this point. Her performance deserves better than the show affords her, mostly because it's obsessed with her looks. A not awful idea for an episode that's executed really poorly. It never feels like one night in any way... It never feels like one night in the way that good bottle episodes manage the passage of time. Also, Scott Bakula does not convince me as a devoted dog owner.
She continues to be very good at T'Pol. Like, that scene on the treadmills is great. And even that scene at the end where she's like kind of sexually innuendoing him, is very well done. Mm-hmm. Like the way that she's delivering those lines, even I was like, is she just following orders? Or
yeah.
Is she being sexy? I can't really tell. Yeah, I thought it was really well done. And she's continues to be really great at that part. Unfortunately, they just focus on her great parts.
It's true. It's true. Excellent pun. I guess we're done here. That's it. Thank you, patrons, for leaving your thoughts. Thank you for supporting the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Our ratings for this. So I'll go first. I feel I have to definitionally give this one a one. I don't think it's one of the worst episodes of Star Trek at all, but on my thing of a one being like a what's going on here kind of, like there's this is beyond there's malfunctioning storylines to a point of what is the main storyline, what's the main take here, why is Archer acting this way? I don't really understand. I think it's a one for me, but I just don't see it as one of the worst episodes that the show has ever done, because it's semi-functional in some ways. And I like the tone. I like that weird whimsical stuff in Sick Bay. Like that's enough for me to be like, there's something good in this episode.
Yeah. I think it's for this show, it is probably a one. If you had to pick an episode that we've watched so far that is a one, it would be this one.
Yeah.
However, I still think it falls under the umbrella of this show, where it's still pretty well put together, even if it doesn't all make sense. Like, there's nothing that feels completely, you know, off the rails.
Yeah. I think that's like because they play enough of it as... I think there's a... Are they trying... They're trying to be funny in this episode sometimes, and I think that trying to be funny covers up... If this was played seriously, you'd be like, this is awful. Like, this is just terrible. Right. But there's enough of a comic thing, including the funeral scene, where you can, if anything, you can just say, well, it's just not that funny to me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, if you watch a one from TNG, you're going, like, ugh, the whole time you watch it. And I don't feel that with this one. I think there's the characterizations, for the most part, are good enough that it saves it from being awful. And it also, like, it's, though tonally it's all over the place and I don't really know what it's about, if you're just looking at the plot doesn't not make sense.
Yeah.
It actually hangs together pretty well.
Yep.
I don't think it's about the right things, but the chain of events is fine. So yeah, I would say it's a high one if I had to give it a rating. But
this is the one I'd go back to. All right, we'll both give it ones.
F plus.
Yeah, we'll both give it ones. It's because it's, you know, it's that weird rating territory where, like off the top of my head, Sleeping Dogs, the Klingon episode where the Klingon ship is stuck in the planet's atmosphere and they go down to it. I would much rather rewatch this one than Sleeping Dogs.
Oh, 100%.
You know?
100%.
Yeah. But Sleeping Dogs is probably, Sleeping Dogs has a plot that is more... There's not an aspect of Sleeping Dogs. You're like, I don't understand why you're doing this. It's just like, this is so boring. I can't believe how boring this plot line is. This one is a little bit more of a screw up, I think, in terms of why is this episode happening is not really answered very well.
And strangely enough, like, even though I don't consider this a great episode, I would probably put this on my list of episodes that you would need to watch if you're watching Enterprise. Because I think you get a lot of good stuff out of it.
Yep. It's good flocks.
It's just, what's that? Good flocks.
Good flocks.
Just what everybody on that ship needs is a nice, good flox.
Nice, hard floxing. Let's see here. I guess we're done. Thank you very much, patrons, for supporting the show. Thank you for leaving your comments. We did all our ratings. Patreon is patreon.com/thepenskyfile. Check out the social media links down below, blah, blah, blah. Clay, do you have anything you want to say before we go?
We just put out last week a new Rotten Horror Picture Show where we covered Halloween 2018, which is a lot of fun. And this week we've got a new badass where we'll be doing Avatar and House and Garden. House and Garden's a cool episode where Poison Ivy tries to turn over a new leaf, so to speak. And the way that she does it is by kidnapping a doctor and replacing his kids with cactus monsters. And she basically implants herself onto his family as their mother.
Mm-hmm.
So it's trying to do the right thing through the lens of a crazed Batman villain.
Check those out. You can go to thepenskefile.com to subscribe to those shows, or they are on the YouTube channel, however you find this show. Thank you very much for listening, guys. We'll be back. I think Marauders is next. I was wrong last episode. Marauders is next. This is, oh, that's the other thing. This was produced in between Minefield and Dead Stop. So there's, they kind of, they shot that episode not back to back, even though the storyline is back to back. And the one thing we didn't touch on here before we go, that space station apparently didn't do a very good job fixing the ship if their warp drive fritzes out 2 days later. So that's kind of a strange connection. Anyway, that's it. Guys, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time.